Next argument for the morning, 22-2074, United States versus Maya Kaye, something like that.
Yes, Your Honor. Gia McGilvray for Mr. Maya Kaye. Your Honor, counsel, may it please the court. The 48-month sentence imposed in this case was unreasonable. Mr. Maya Kaye's properly calculated guideline range was 10 to 16 months. The district court imposed a sentence three times his high end, stating that the sentence in his New York State case was too lenient. The New York State court was in the best position to impose a just sentence for Mr. Maya Kaye's prior offense. In the district court, his offense was a simple re-entry. Based upon all the information, there's no reasonable way to justify a sentence 32 months higher than his high end. The sentence was unreasonable. As I mentioned, Mr. Maya Kaye's properly calculated guideline range was 10 to 16 months. That guideline range took into consideration his criminal history in two areas. First, with regards to his criminal history points, for that offense, he received four criminal history points for a criminal history category of three. His criminal history was also taken into account in establishing his offense level under 2L1.2. He received a four-level enhancement for his prior sex offense from Rockland County. Notably, there was no criminal history for Mr. Maya Kaye that was outside the relevant time frame and therefore excluded, and he didn't have any unconvicted conduct in his case. The New York State Court was in the best position to sentence Mr. Maya Kaye for his underlying sex offense, and I think the New York State Court got that sentence right. It was not too lenient. The sentencing court there had a front row seat to what had happened in that underlying offense. The judge was familiar with the facts, the evidence, understood the weaknesses and strengths of the case. Under New York law, it appears he had a sex offender risk assessment available to him. And all the parties there, the judge, the prosecution, the defense, probation, they were all involved. They had firsthand knowledge.
Well, notably, the New York court also gave him, it was a very low sentence, on a potential 2 to 7 year sentence.
That's correct.
It gave him a 1 year sentence. And then it also imposed a 10-year probationary. And included in that was he's not to return to the U.S., but importantly, he's not to have unsupervised contact with children, and he's got to seek sex offender treatment. And that was a big part of what the district court was concerned about here. Not only did he get a very lenient sentence by any standards for his conduct, but he didn't comply with those very important terms of a 10-year probation.
Well, Your Honor,
I think from what I read, the court emphasized that several times.
And Your Honor, what I'd like to point out is that under New York penal law, 70.80, the judge was required to impose a two-year, not less than two-year sentence, and not more than a seven-year sentence, unless, having regard for the nature and the circumstance of the crime and the history and character of the defendant, the court concluded it would be unduly harsh to impose a determinate sentence. So the court knew that that was where the court had to be, unless there were circumstances that justified a lesser sentence. And this court went ahead and imposed 10 years probation with...
And this was for a first-degree sexual abuse of a four-year-old sister.
That's correct,
right?
A one-time offense.
So why weren't those probationary conditions extremely important here?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the probation conditions were extremely important, and despite what the court said, I think that there was evidence in the record that Mr. Maya Kaye had First of all, there was no evidence in the record that his contact with his children had not been supervised. A letter from his wife indicated that she was aware of the sexual abuse, and she specifically stated that there had been no physical or
sexual abuse.
She specifically stated in that letter that there was no had been no sexual abuse to her children. She also explained...
Well, that's just her children. I mean, he said that he took the children to school and that kind of thing, right? And so he had to be around other children other than his own children.
And, Your Honor, that's correct. And there was no evidence in the record that indicate that any of his time around other children was unsupervised.
Well, that's not the question. The question is he was prohibited by his 10-year probationary sentence from being around children unsupervised. He chose, after receiving a very lenient sentence, to ignore that.
Well, Your Honor,
He also did not receive sexual offender treatment, or he certainly didn't put on any evidence of it.
He did state to the court that he had taken classes in sexual that had taught him about sexual behavior, and he did advise the court of that.
He did, but the court pointed out that he didn't provide any documentation to verify that, right?
That's correct. Those classes were taken in Ecuador, and his wife had tried to get documentation and get that over, Your Honor, but...
I know that to some extent this ends up being a matter of framing, but under one framing, we're talking about a district court judge that was trying to punish him to make up for what he didn't get in New York. But under another framing, which is what I want to pursue for a moment, why isn't this a situation responsive to the 3553A factors where the court is looking at deterrence because you didn't learn the first time that you should obey the law, the circumstances of this offense in the sense that the conduct involved him violating his probationary conditions, and again, deterrence in the sense that he had some of those conditions involved what could be perceived as a continuing threat to children. In other words, he was around children when he knew he shouldn't have been around children. He's coming back into the United States to visit his family. So why aren't those conditions under that second framing entirely responsive to what 3553A is about? And we are not talking about the court saying, oh boy, I'm going to go back and get you because you didn't get it in New York the first time.
Well, Your Honor, I think in terms of deterrence, there was evidence in the record that there had been no additional criminal conduct. There was a certificate.
He came back.
That was,
he's not supposed to have come back to the United States. That's criminal conduct, right?
But the court was primarily concerned about conduct related to minors, and there was a certificate provided from the court in Ecuador that showed that he had not been charged with any additional conduct. And as I said, the letter from his wife...
Was there a certificate provided that said he didn't have any contact with children? No. I mean, that was the problem. He violated those really important terms.
And, Your Honor, I do believe that the letter from his wife does indicate that she was aware of the offense, and there's nothing in the record that shows that she was not supervising his conduct or his contact with his children. But I think if the court looks at it this way, if the court believes that those were issues and he got a lenient sentence, if you look at what he would have received if he had been given the maximum sentence under New York law, which was 7 years, he would have still been in a criminal history category of 3 for 5 criminal history points. He would have had a 10-level enhancement under the 2L1.2, but still, even with that, he would have only been at 24 to 30 months. This is a sentence 18 months more, the high end of what he would have had if he had been given the maximum penalty under New York law.
And the premise of that line of argument is that the court is trying to make up for what he didn't get in New York. And what I'm saying is that's not the only way to read what the court was doing, which was that the court was using that New York sentence to give it some clues into what the current offense tells us about the defendant. In other words, his respect for the law, his respect for the deterrence that came out of the New York sentence, and his willingness to do things that could jeopardize children. Whether he did it or not, jeopardize children, right?
I think that that was something that the court was concerned about, but I think you have to look at what the court stated over and over. And the court repeatedly stated throughout the sentencing transcript and then also in the statement of reasons that for the statement of reasons, under the nature and circumstances and under 3553A, under that section, it's supposed to be the offense, the instant offense, so for reentry. And there was marked extreme conduct, general aggravating factors. But with his reentry offense, there was no extreme conduct. He didn't attempt to flee when they were arresting him. He didn't resist. There was no physical confrontation. There was no assault. And unlike the average reentry defender who has 3.2 prior deportations, this was he had one deportation.
He was coming to visit family, which in the past, visiting, being with family had resulted in him being convicted of a criminal offense.
And
so couldn't the court take into consideration what he was doing? He viewed that as benign. It could also be viewed as problematic, right?
It could have been, Your Honor, but I think the fact that he had taken self-initiated, because there was nobody, he was deported and didn't have the opportunity to engage in the things that were required here in this country. And yet when he was deported and he went back to Ecuador, he self-initiated taking things to rehabilitate himself. He got his wife wrote a letter, and he wrote a letter that he had taken classes in drug and alcohol abuse. He was under the influence when he committed the offense, so that was important for him to address. He stated that he had taken some classes regarding sexual conduct, and there hadn't been any additional criminal conduct.
Well, the court didn't discount that. The court spoke to that, and so it considered it, right?
And I think partially, Your Honor. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal, but I think that the court's overall emphasis throughout the transcript in the statement of reasons was he got a lenient sentence in New York, and no other defendant that her statement was that no other defendant with criminal history similar to this has received a sentence that lenient. Similar defendants have received higher sentences in their state court offenses. And
what do you think the judge was referring to there? It seemed to me that she wasn't just referring to New York. She seemed to be referring to other state. She said in their state court offenses, other defendants. She seemed to be saying generally you're going to get a higher sentence for this. And certainly that's true in Midwestern states.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I did include 9 cases specifically because the nationwide statistics show I'll finish answering your question, but I would like to reserve some time. The nationwide statistics show that the average sentence is 13 months for someone in criminal history category 3, 35 months for someone in criminal history category 6. So if you move him all the way over to criminal history category 6, the sentence still exceeds the 35 months by 13 months. The government wasn't happy because those were nationwide. We don't know the specifics. So I included 9 cases of sex offenses. Individuals, reentry individuals who with prior sex offenses. Out of those, the highest sentence was 30 months. That was for sexual penetration in the second degree resulting in personal injury in New Mexico. That gentleman's guideline range was 37 to 46 months. He actually got a variance. With all the others, child molestation, aggravated child molestation, lewd and lascivious acts with minors, 24 months, 24 months, 18 months. Lewd and lascivious battery, sex with a victim, 12 to 15 years.
Do we know how long each of those...
12 months.
How long did each of them serve their state crimes?
Some of them, there was one that...
And what were their probationary terms, which is what we're talking about here?
Some of that information wasn't available. One was a gentleman served I mean, we have one gentleman who served 16 months on third-degree rape and delivering marijuana to a minor, and he got 106 days for his reentry. He served 16 months. So he served...
Third-degree rape, which is different than what we have here.
Right, but we do have... I have pointed out specific cases with very similar behavior where the sentence imposed was significantly less than the sentence imposed in this case. And importantly, the government's reason for asking for the 48-month sentence was because they said that that is the sentence that they requested in this case of Kaiba Antelli. But the facts of Kaiba Antelli are nothing like the facts of Mr. Malakaye. And so you pick a 48-month sentence because you did it in another case and you're going to ask for it here because it's the same underlying conduct, but the circumstances are entirely different. There's just no way to get to the three times the high end of Mr. Malakaye's guideline range reasonably. And I think that...
We'll give you some time on rebuttal, but let's hear from the
thank
government.
Thank you,
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tiffany Walters for the United States. The District Court did not abuse its discretion in varying upward to impose a 48-month sentence.
What about this reference to the 48-month sentence being the government advocated for it because it was like another case, and that apparently the argument is the circumstances of that case weren't like this one? Why don't you start there, please, for me, and explain to me whether, in fact, the circumstances were different or not?
Yes, Your Honor. As far as Kaiba Antelli, the government, Mr. Kaiba Antelli was sentenced to 51 months. And in that case, the circumstances were different, as any two cases are. So in that case, there was a prior reentry. And in that case, there does appear to have been multiple victims, and the sexual abuse does appear to have gone on for a longer period of time. Also, the defendant in that case appears not to, he did not plead to that conduct. So he required that conduct to be proved up at sentencing. There wasn't actually a conviction because of the concern regarding the harm to the minor victims. They would have to testify. So certainly, our argument is not that these cases are identical and that the court can say, well, if it was 51 months in this case, then 48 months is correct in this case. Each sentencing case is an individual assessment of the 3553A factors. And while I think it's helpful to point to that case and say, this 48-month sentence is not outside the range of permissible choices that the district court could have imposed, I don't think it's a direct corollary, and we're not claiming that it is. But what I do think the district court did here is go through the 3553A factors as relevant to Mr. Malakaye. And here, the district court definitely gave significant weight to his prior conviction for sexual abuse of a minor. But that conviction was relevant to most of the 3553A factors in sentencing for his current reentry conviction. It is part of his history and characteristics. The court considered that he had this prior conviction, that he was under the influence at the time, that he indicated at the time that he did not understand that his conduct was wrong. The court considered the probation violations. And I'd like to directly address some of the questions regarding the probation violations. Before the district court, the United States asserted that it was reasonable to infer that not all of this conduct could have been supervised with his children. And that was not disputed below. So this issue was not litigated. A record was not developed on exactly whether or not his wife supervised or in what context and all of that. But even if considering this argument on plain error review, if the court would choose to overlook the waiver that it wasn't also raised in the opening brief, the record amply supports the district court's finding. The probation requirements required him not to have contact with children unless he was supervised by someone over the age of 21 who had knowledge of his conviction, and that children were not allowed to stay overnight in his residence without permission of the probation officer. He wasn't actively supervised, so we know that he likely did not have that permission. And then as to his wife's supervision, first in the letter, as the district court noted, we're not clear that she knew exactly what the conviction was for, what the conduct was that was underlying. And then also the PSR indicates that his wife was 21 years old at the time the PSR was disclosed, and that their oldest child was 6 years old. So his wife was a child herself when that first child was born and was not qualified to be the adult supervision in that situation. The district court was appropriately concerned regarding this situation. The district court considered not only this conviction in terms of its history and characteristics, but also in terms of the need to reflect the seriousness of the reentry offense and to provide just punishment. A reentry is inherently different when it's committed by someone who has a prior history of a sex offense and has committed and has reentered while on probation after having violated the terms of that probation. That is part of the nature of that reentry offense. And we see the relevance of that in the guidelines, which do increase the offense level based on the level of sentence from a prior conviction. And that also demonstrates why the guidelines aren't sufficient to fully capture the conduct here, because the guidelines are solely concerned with the length of the sentence. Was it more or less than a year and 1 month? Was it more or less than 2 years? Was it more or less than 5 years? It's not looking at the facts or the conduct in the case, which gives rise to concerns regarding a number of the 3553A factors. And while the district court here obviously...
One of the arguments that's made by the defendant here is that even if he had served the full 7 years under New York law, his guideline range would have still been far less than the 48 months that he got.
Correct.
What does that say about sentencing disparity here?
So the district court referenced sentencing disparity, and had he been sentenced to up to 7 years, it would hit that 5-year cutoff. He would get, I believe, 10 offense levels, and his guideline range would go up to 33. We dispute slightly the calculations because he received only two offense.
It was only two, right.
For acceptance of responsibility. Right. But certainly it's still a bump up.
Much less, right.
But
that's if he had had the full 7 years.
Sure. The guidelines still are only looking at the sentencing range. They're not looking at the conduct. The underlying conduct for this offense was egregious and directly impacts public safety in a way that some other offenses may not, or at least to the same degree of concern to the safety of children, even children in his family. So it's appropriate for the court to consider that as part of the 3553A factors. And the district court looked at it and said almost no defendants who commit sex offenses like this receive such lenient sentences. So inherently there's some disparity baked in, but the court also said even if there is a disparity, I find that it's warranted here. And that's important because sentencing disparities are absolutely a factor under 3553A that the district court has to consider. But it doesn't drive the analysis solely. It is one of those factors that the court has to balance. And so the court can say, well, perhaps there is some disparity here, but even so, I'm going to look at these other factors, including the seriousness of this offense, the threat to public safety, the issue of deterrence, where the defendant was not deterred by this lenient sentence and still proceeded to violate the conditions of his probation to return, and that I need to impose a longer sentence that will deter him this time. So while that is absolutely one consideration, the court considered that and ultimately on weighing decided that wasn't sufficient to hold the sentence within the guideline range or to limit it to 33 months as it would have if it was just looking at 5 years versus 5 years versus the 355 days that the defendant received. The defendant also spends a lot of time talking about the statute of conviction in New York, and I just want to point out that this is not a case where we're looking at it from a categorical lens, where we're looking at the offense of the conviction and how we compare that. This is sentencing, where the court can consider anything about the defendant's history and characteristics. And
we don't do categorical analysis in sentencing.
Thank goodness we don't. Or at least not in this context. I won't say categorically, but here it's not relevant. So here we're looking at the underlying conduct, and that was not disputed. Mr. Malakaye never said, I didn't do the conduct that I won't get into in detail. I'm sure the court has reviewed the record that's reflected in the PSR, and the district court is absolutely in a position to look at that conduct and say that conduct is egregious. It presents an excessive risk to public safety. He's shown that he's been able to harm a child, and I'm concerned that he could do it again, and I need to deter him, and I need to protect the public. And those are all proper considerations of the 3553A. And ultimately, this is a discretionary review. We're looking at whether or not there's an abuse of discretion. This court, in many cases, has recognized that there's a range of permissible choices. Another judge may not have sentenced Mr. Malakaye to this exact sentence. This court might even choose a different sentence. But none of those are reasons to reverse. The analysis is whether or not the court's decision was reasonable in light of the 3553A factors as a whole. And here, I think because of the court's consideration of the facts and of the 3553A factors, we can see that it was.
And at what point would a cutoff be appropriate here? I mean, what's the limiting principle on your argument in terms of when the sentence would have been unreasonable? I mean, 144 months, 96 months, would that be okay?
Your Honor, I can't answer that question because we don't have any sort of means to calculate what the appropriate sentence is in this case. And sentencing is necessarily fact-bound. And so the court looked at the facts and found that 48 months was appropriate here. Is there some upper limit? Presumably, but I don't have the analysis from the Supreme Court in Gala, from this court, that would enable me to do anything more than pick a number out of my head. I think that the court, in reviewing these sentences, has looked at these cases individually, looked at the 3553A factors, and determined whether or not it's reasonable in a given case. And here, I believe it is. And I know that Mr. Malakaye has cited a number of cases where defendants have received different sentences. But we don't know exactly what the underlying offense conduct were in all of those cases. We don't know what the underlying sentence was in all of those cases. And we don't know what the district court's rationale was in reaching that sentence. This court has repeatedly indicated that this sort of comparison is almost always useless because we simply just don't have enough information. So I think that the court has to look at the facts here in light of the 3553A factors. And while the guideline range is absolutely one of those factors, which the court, the district court here, did consider, it only goes so far. In Gall, the court discussed a lot of this, the issue of considering percentage deviations from the guideline sentence. Here we have a very low guideline sentence. So in terms of percentage deviation, any upward variance is going to look more extreme, just as a matter of mathematics. The court also talked about, well, how do you mathematically consider whether or not, you know, one particular 3553A factor, like rehabilitation, is that worth a 30% reduction, or another factor is worth whatever percentage reduction? The court described that mathematical calculation as almost comparing apples to oranges, and I think that's true, or counting apples with oranges, I think, is the court's language. And I think that's true. It's hard to say that this is the range in any given case, and this is what would be acceptable, and this is the upper limit. So, unfortunately, I'm not able to directly answer your question, Chief Judge Holmes, but I do think when we're looking at the facts of this case and the 3553A factors, the district court's decision was reasonable. If there's no further questions, the United States would ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to just address 4 points briefly. First of all, counsel had mentioned that we don't know the facts here, but in 2016, 2L1.2 was restructured. It went from specific offense characteristics of criminal history to a sentence imposed model. And in doing that, the commission said that the length of the sentence imposed by the sentencing court is a strong indicator of the court's assessment of the seriousness of the predicate offense. So there's deference built into the new structure of 2L1.2 as to the sentence imposed by the sentencing court. They know that case better. Number two, in Booker, I mean, the Supreme Court could have rejected the guidelines outright in Booker, but the court didn't. They excised the sections that they felt made it unconstitutional or would have made it unconstitutional, but in that, they were clear that they wanted there to be some guidelines, because you could have a judge who says, yeah, I want to ignore the guidelines because I don't like how the guidelines treat this certain class of people, and I don't like what these people do. So I'm going to give them what I want. And it's clear that a sex offense is not a favorable offense, but because somebody has a sex offense isn't a reason to give them an unreasonable sentence. The government stated, quote, the reason why we're asking for the 48-month sentence, that is the same sentence we requested in the Antelli case. It was like pulled out of the air. You can't, the sentence has to be tethered to facts, or it makes a mockery of the guidelines. And as it is right now, the Supreme Court wanted the guidelines to remain in place. There's just no way to get to the sentence of 48 months given Mr. Malakaye's conduct, even if you sentence him at the highest amount under the state court system.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted. Thank you for your strong arguments.